Hey, hey. Hey now.
Hey. Hi now.
You know what's on AMC channel right this moment, EZR?
Mm-mm.
Dark Knight Rises.
Duh. It's on Hulu all the time.
Yeah, I don't have Hulu anymore.
Oh, right.
I have HBO Max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard. See, that's the problem. It has that Lord of the Rings problem, where I love Lord of the Rings playing all the time on a weekend. But am I following it? I've never read the books. No, I'm not following it. I have no idea what's happening. But if you really sit down and watch it, I don't know what's happening.
And that's a good thing.
No, yes and no. I like atmosphere movies where you just have it on and you're having, you know, it's all cozy. But then if the plot doesn't make sense, then what made it an atmosphere movie? Because it's supposed to be, you're supposed to know what's happening.
Well, the
right?
plot of the Lord of the Rings movies is really simple. It's three movies about climbing up a mountain.
Yeah. No. I'm saying is that I haven't read the books. Therefore, do I know every little corner?
Oh, you saying you want to read the Dark Knight Rises comic books?
No, I'm saying that the police procedural part makes no sense.
The police procedural part makes no sense.
Yes. Why do they bring all the mob guys into the courtroom to prosecute that? Like all of what, like 100, 500 mob guys. And then everyone gets mad and it becomes this kind of rumble. I don't remember.
I think you're talking. Well, I think you're mixing up two and three. But look, we got Bachelor to talk about.
Oh, you can't bring it up and then be like, never mind. Huh?
Should we talk about current events?
No,
never. No, nobody's coming to us for that kind of news. They're here to talk about The Bachelor.
But we talk about deep social issues, and we're kind of amidst of one of the deepest social issues of our time.
No, I mean, it can come up. I'm sure it will somehow related to The Bachelor. Because, Craig, I think you need to give yourself more time on this episode than you think you do. First off, sit down. Secondly...
All right, I'm sitting.
Slate your head, because everyone's name who you think you know, you definitely do not know, because you aren't listening to their names or you're not reading their chyron.
What
episode
are you talking
two?
About?
I know.
Feel like I'm being attacked here.
Well, I just don't want to get into a conversation. Just anytime we say this person is this, just believe us. This is where I'm at.
I know.
No,
some
see?
Names.
Do you
I
do?
Know some names.
Name,
yes.
Name five women.
Okay, Kit. And
tell me something about them.
Mm-hmm. Kit got a good edit where she looked like she was bored out of her mind the entire time, which I love.
Yeah, she got a good edit for sure.
There's Bree, who he likes.
Who's Bree?
She went on the date, first date.
Okay.
Then there's Victoria, who I really don't feel like talking about that much. I don't know how you feel.
Whoa, we got lots.
We've definitely got some things to discuss with Victoria. She's a handful.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Three out of five, Craig. No.
Hold on. I'm still going. But my concern with the Bachelor Masters podcast is always that we're going to talk about what all the other podcasts are already talking about. And with Victoria, I feel like it's such a one-trick pony.
No, but Craig, I got history. I got Bachelor Masters historical point of view.
Okay. All right.
So,
Craig, if you wanted to talk politics and current events, there's a Victoria tie-in right there.
Because of Queen Victoria?
No.
No, because she's a Trump princess. Supporter.
But Matt James is too.
Matt James is a Republican, but it is unclear if he's a Trump Republican.
His mom is has come out as a Trump supporter.
Ooh.
But if you don't know this, on social media there's a picture they found of Victoria with a flag in the background. Now, what flag was it?
it's a Trump flag, like the blue flag that says Trump on it, like okay. Trump 2020, you know. Yeah. You know that type right. of flag.
Yeah. So there's speculation that she's a Trumper as well. Okay. And then there's MJ, who doesn't wear makeup.
Tell me something else about her that's very...
I don't know. She seems...
extremely noticeable about MJ, I would say.
Her hair?
Okay. Yes, she has beautiful hair.
She has... She's...
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's like Felicity hair.
That's what I was going to say. It's very 90s. Like, it's like a 90s look.
Yeah, well, she's also a hairdresser, isn't she?
Oh.
Yes, she is. She's a hairdresser from Ohio.
I just made Easier Ooh with my four detailed knowledge.
Well, I didn't know that, but 4 out of 4. Okay, one more.
And then, let's see, from last night, let me think. Who was the girl? No, who was the girl that got the orchid? Right.
Exactly. No, this isn't. Yes, we know you know there. We know you saw the episode. I'm counting on that you can't match faces to names
What's her name?
Okay, so you agree 4 out of 5, and I'll.
You don't know her name either.
Here I do.
What is it?
I also know her name.
Marilyn.
Marilyn, it's and she Marilyn. Got caught up in the Victoria drama.
Okay. Yes, and. Yeah.
So I did 4.5.
Yeah, I know you can tell. I know you saw the episode. I know you know more than 5 names. I know you know all the events that happened. But do I trust you to connect those 3 things? No. So when we say this person is this, listen so that we can set the scene for you. I just don't want you to get lost. That's my concern.
If I'm get kidding. Lost? The whole episode was about Victoria causing a stink.
Yeah, I mean, there's other stuff.
Yeah, there was other things in there, yeah, that we would want to discuss. I mean, maybe what we should do here is we can put Victoria off to the side and talk about his dates that don't include Victoria first.
That'd be nice. I'd be cool with that.
Go crazy.
Please, take it away.
All right, yeah, there's not as much material here, which is why I think we could, you know, hit it out pretty early. But the first one-on-one, so this week they had 2 one-on-ones and 1 very large group date that had, I believe, 18 women on it. Women did not get a date at all. Yeah. The first one-on-one was with Brie.
Yeah, and like Brie.
Yeah, I like her too, and Team I feel like Brie. They have a nice vibe together. They were driving the ATVs, and I don't know if y'all were scared when they flipped the ATV, because people can get seriously hurt doing that.
Yeah, you get your leg crushed.
Anything that's gas powered, you know, I don't have any affection for. So I was like, all right, woohoo, they're driving ATVs, and if they get hurt, big deal. It's their own fault for driving on such a killer vehicle.
Yeah, it is a vehicle that's like known for having a lot of injuries. People have died in ATV wrecks, so it's not the safest thing you could do.
But cars there is something very
well, I'll say one other thing before I get into something I think kills. Important about transportation. But
no,
after they do their ATVs, but
how many people do buses kill?
I'm sure they kill people.
Is a fast moving anything against anyone without metal protection is like I don't think that argument is fair.
You're supposed to be on my side.
I kind of, I mean, I am and I'm not. Like, I also want to tell the truth. You know, I don't want to be like, I can nitpick facts to like hate cars. And I don't completely hate cars though.
Well, I do. So
I know. But I don't think, I don't think it's reasonable.
So they're on ATVs, but you know, whatever, who cares?
They're on the ATVs. They flip it, that happens. They get all muddy.
He apologizes to Bree's mom. Now, I don't want to age of parenthood shame, but her mom was 13 when she got pregnant with her.
I'm sorry. No, Craig, it is 100% not okay to have a kid so young. I don't care.
So you are age of parenting shame.
Yes. Look, I don't know the situation. The situation could be crazy, right? The situation could be her mom was raped. There was no abortion access. They lived, you know, I'm not shaming the situation or the mom, but there are no, okay. The way it's not okay for a 13-year-old or an 18-year-old or a 16-year-old to take stimulants of any kind, you can't change your body at that age and expect the kid to come out, you know, be 18 and be a responsible person. Bree seems nice. She seems sweet. I have known girls growing up who got pregnant young and had kids. I have friends who were the product of a young pregnancy.
Right.
None of them are okay with their lives because you are not capable of maturity or care at that age.
Right.
That is 100% true. And I don't care how much shit we get for this. That is not... If you are choosing in the best of situations to have a kid that young, you are an idiot and the people around you are idiotic. Like for letting that happen. And here's what always happens though. If that person has a kid that young and there's a big family unit that can take care of that kid, that's the best thing that you could have. But it doesn't sound like that was true in this case. And again, right. We don't know the issues. Like we don't know what kind of duress the mother was under. So it's not her fault that we know of, but if you can choose not to, you do not do it. And you do not like let your kid go through with it, because even if the grandma raises them or the grandparents, you are going to severely impair that child for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And there is like, I'm not saying there's no excuses, because there are tons of great excuses for why a kid is born to a such a young child. That's a 13-year-old child. That is whatever's going on is deeper than just that, her mom. It's the grandma. It's the probably the whole unit. Oh, no.
So if you're that age and you're listening to the podcast and you're having sex, practice safe sex, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
My assumption is that it was not an active choice on behalf of the mother. Like, I never for a moment thought that she was 13 and being like, you know, I'd just love to have a kid. Well, that didn't even cross my mind. You know,
I've had interaction with kids that age that are like, I'm having a kid. And if you turn on like teen mom, it's like that too.
Yeah. It's totally a. Like, okay. Oh, and
I thought teen mom was all like accidental pregnancies, you know?
Well,
like,
I'm trying to have a kid.
Right. It's not that it wasn't accidental. It's just that it was okay with, like, they think having a kid is different than it's going to be. I know two young girls right now, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, one that's pregnant and one that, and these are friends of a really good friend of mine. So someone that's my age is 30. I think he's 35 or 34. He's already a grandpa.
Right.
And I'm like, I mean, I did not hold back in telling him what the fuck is wrong with you. Don't encourage this. Don't encourage your two girls to have kids. And they both, one is pregnant and one has a kid. And do you think she's taking care? I mean, I'm just so mad about it. Do you think she's taking care of her kid? She's not. Everyone else is. Because it's so cute and so like, wow, I'm going to have a kid. Oh, I'm so excited. The dad is not like, you know, it's just a mess of trouble. Okay. Like, I don't know. I'm so mad about it still.
I was going to clarify that the show 16 and Pregnant has a lot more samples of teenage pregnancy than Teen Mom, which just focuses on a specific cast. If that makes sense.
So. Yeah, I think that one's TLC and the other one's MTV. So the MTV one follows the women that are still.
No, I think that they're both MTV, but yeah.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's, I mean, we all know the like Teen Mom OG, and then they had more kids because they got rich off of
they just keep having
the show.
More kids.
Well, the thing is, it's not a good example because they became famous because they were on the show. So, of course, it's going to give them, I mean, it doesn't give them the maturity. But it gives them money and, like, you know, you can dedicate yourself to being a mom. That's not even half of it, though. It's not that you're not financially stable enough. It's that your brain doesn't work to care for someone else at that age. Anyway. Okay.
Yep.
I'm done with Brie now. Ooh. You guys can keep going about her. It's not about her, though.
No, that was not her problem. Not even a thing that I was going to bring up, because I didn't. The only thing that crossed my mind is I did the math and was like, oh, I'm much closer to Bria's mom's age than I am to Bria's age. Bria's 24 now.
I mean, imagine being 31 and your kid is out of the coop. That's got to be crazy.
It is wild. It does sound like from the little that she mentioned that she and her mom have a pretty good relationship. She did say the thing about her mom is now pregnant right now and engaged to somebody, and she felt like, you know, they're starting a whole new family that doesn't necessarily include Brie, right, because she is right, so much older, and, you know, so it feels like there's some alienation perhaps there in terms of being like, she grew up with a single very young mom, it sounds like, and then now her single very young mom has a brand new family, so that's kind right, of a thing to think about. But I was much more interested in how Matt was being presented here.
Right. But wait a minute, didn't it sound like she didn't, and this is going to be true, that she didn't have a relationship with her mom for a while? She's like, I can't come home. She said something like that.
No, I think it was, he asked about her dad, and was her dad ever in the picture? And she was kind of like, not really. But she said she was raised by a single mom. So I'm assuming that means that, you know, at a certain point, it was just her and her mom there. And the not coming home thing was in reference to feeling like her mom has built a new life that doesn't necessarily include her now.
Right. I think the single mom picture we have is different than this single mom. I think she means by one parent, like was the only one that was around. She doesn't mean like, you know, a 14-year-old got an apartment with a baby.
Yeah, I thought it would more be like maybe when her mom was 18 or 19, they moved out of the grandparents' house or something along those lines. But yeah, I was very interested in, well, obviously they're showing gratuitous Matt James shirtless body stuff because that's how they do. But on this date, when they finish their ATV stuff and they go to this, it's like a hot tub in the woods, and they have to chop the wood.
Always. Yeah.
Yes. And of course, Matt has to take off his shirt to chop. Like, why wouldn't he? But it was just very funny to me that as they show shirtless Matt James chopping wood, there was like sexy music playing. Did either of you notice that? Where it was like, ooh, boom chicka wow wow, Matt James chopping wood, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a chopping wood scene.
So I thought that was kind of funny that they were like, gotta lay in the sexy music right there. But the other thing that was really interesting to me, and this comes up again on Sarah's date, who is the other one-on-one, is that Brie says in the hot tub when they're having a conversation that prior to the date that day, when she was talking to the other women in the house, they said something like, what if you died on your date? Which is a weird conversational gambit right out of the date. But apparently the other women were like, whoa, what if you died on the date? And she was like, well, at least we'd die together. And then it was like, ha ha ha, our ATV accident brings us so much closer together because there was this element of near-death experience, right? Yeah. And Sarah says the exact same thing on her date where she was like, oh, I was so scared I was going to die, but like, at least I would die with you, so that's cool. And I was like, why are these women continually talking about dying on their dates? Like,
Don't you think it's like a COVID thing? Like, people are just always thinking about it because they keep mentioning it. Like, they keep talking about in these times. Like, I feel like I hear it. It's
so bizarre to me that, like, this idea that Bree's getting ready to go on her date and the other women in their house are like, don't know what y'all are doing yet, but what if you die on it?
Yeah. I think about that all the time. I'm like, if I go to the hospital, no one will attend to me because there's no hospital beds.
Yeah, it's just like a very funny thing to me that they're like, oh, there's sort of a death bonding theme throughout this episode.
I feel like it feels more, you know, 8-year-old-ish than it does 30-something-year-old because 8-year-olds talk like that all the time. And then you lift and then you get in a plane and then you die. Like, you know, it seems so weird and young kid-ish to me. I didn't take it serious at all because of that. Like, I didn't serious. I don't think they seriously considered it. It felt very
well. There's that thing with like adrenaline, mature. Right? That
yeah.
I know we've talked about on other dates in the past when they'll do stuff like bungee jumping together or whatever. That's like the idea that your adrenaline is racing so much and you're scared, but then you do a thing and you're exhilarated and it bonds you in a way. So where you suddenly feel closer to this person, even though you haven't had any other interactions besides that, you know, it's just, it kind of fast tracks a thing, but the ATV accident was not intentional. Presumably, I don't know why they'd ever want to have,
it looked intentional.
It would feel like it would be a liability risk, right? Like what if her leg did get crushed? It would be a huge risk to do a fake accident on an ATV. If that's, you know, I just feel like it seemed more like it must have been a legit accident. And then on Sarah's date, it was when they went on the biplane, the tiny little biplane. And that's
where she didn't have a hair tie.
Yeah, so that made her feel like, you know, a near-death kind of thing. And it was like, well, like I could see the adrenaline being involved in both of them, but I don't think my brain would have automatically jumped to, like, I think we're probably going to die together right now.
Yeah, it's just like, I feel like it's just something you say. You know, like surreal or literally, it's just another going into tonight. I'm really nervous. Like, it's just, we're going to die. You know, it's just something else you say.
My heart is literally in my stomach.
Yeah. There's what's the other one they always do? Well, if we're jumping to Sarah, which I'm more or less ready to do.
Yeah, I think we've covered Bree's date and the interesting parts of it. So let's move ahead to Sarah, and then we'll kind of reverse in the timeline and go to the big group date.
Yeah, I like that Sarah. So she's saying, so I like the way it sounded, kind of like a courtroom thing. You know, your lawyer asks you the question that you know the defense or whoever is going to ask you, so that you can, you know, wipe your hands of that question. So she goes, even though I should be home with my dad, I'm here with you because my dad is going to be very happy to watch this. So, I, you know, I thought that was a good defense before anyone could say, hey, what about, why aren't you home right now? Which is good. But you're telling me that Sarah's dad is watching the hot tub scene with what's happening like above the water and what's happening underneath the water. Like, I was very nervous for her watching it back, possibly with her dad.
I would hope that nobody's parents watches them on this show, honestly.
I'm going to disagree.
Uh-huh.
I think if you have a daughter, you should be comfortable seeing them in a bathing suit on TV.
I would be just as mortified if I was Matt's mom. Like, it's not about a daughter or a son. It's just the, like, you left me to just, like, what did you do? You know, I don't know.
So you're saying it's more that she left than that she's in a hot tub.
It just seemed like the conversation was right next to that. I left because I'm supposed to find, you know, I wanted to, my dad wants to make sure I'm happy. And then that's the next scene. And it just seemed too close together. It has nothing to do with whether she's actually happy or excited or what's going on, but it's a little close together. I mean,
she's been taking care of her dad for years now. I think you got to be able to let your kid go live their life.
Yeah, it was just too, it seemed like another one of these innuendos that I keep talking about. You know, they don't say, I'm here because I want to find my person so I can take him back. Like, it didn't feel like that. It felt like it was a sexual innuendo. Yeah. I'm here because my dad wants to see me happy. It was weird. I don't know. It's too early to read this much into it. I just thought she just talked about her dad, and then she's in the skimpy bikini in a hot tub. I was like, oh, that's just.
Oh, I didn't see any sexual intonation into that at all.
Mm-hmm. How so? So
this had come up, right, in her date. They go on the plane and all of that. And then after the plane, they're having like a drink thing where they're sitting down before they go into the hot tub. And that's when they start talking about her dad. Because before this segment, when they're sitting at the table, he had asked to think about her family, and she talks about how close she is with her mom, and he's like, oh, what about your dad? And she sort of, you know, takes a long pause and is like, I'm even closer with my dad probably than my mom. Like, love my dad, he's great. And then Matt does the to camera thing that's like, she's holding back. I need her to be vulnerable and open with me because all the other women are vulnerable and open. I like Sarah. I want to make this work. But like, why won't she tell me about her dad's secrets? You know? Mm-hmm. And then she does in the very next scene, which is kind of funny to me that I'm like, you know, she is going to tell him. It was just literally a one momentary pause before they have pick up the conversation like 2 hours later. But that's when she brings up her dad's ALS and talking about, you know, moving back home and things like that. And the one thing I did really like about Matt's reaction is that he says something to her along the lines of, you know, what can I do to help you in this situation? And I thought that was just like a very nice response to hearing about this, because I feel like in the past, we've mostly seen bachelors and bachelorettes, they'll hear a very sad story from a contestant, right? And they'll just be like, thank you for sharing that with me. Wow, like, thank you for being open. But they don't ever have that thing that's like, wow, like, what a horrible thing you're sharing. Like, how sad, how can I help you? And I was like, oh, wow. Like, that makes me feel like he might be a legitimately nice person, because that was his reaction, rather than being like, thank you for doing required opening up of your soul to me. Now let's move on to hot tub making out, is that he did try to have sort of that closing line of asking about her and how she's doing and how he could help. And I think I wrote in my notebook that I was like, oh, Claire would never have this kind of reaction, as we saw. You know, some guy would tell her something horrible and she'd be like, anyway, about Dale, what did he say to you? You know, so.
But I think it was kind of a trick, but not from Matt James, but from, like, if I was in that situation, maybe I'd be like, wow, how considerate. And it was legitimately considerate, like, period on that. And then I'd be like, wait a minute, you're the bachelor. I can't really ask anything of you. So when you say that from a position of, you know, you're the lead, what can I actually, like, it seems like a tricky thing to actually have an answer to.
Mm-hmm.
So I have kind of, mm-hmm, like, when I heard that, I was like, I had the same reaction. I was like, that's nice. But what could she honestly say? Because, you know, when your boss asks you, what can I do for you? I'm like, I don't know where is my mind games at that I can ask, but I can still be okay. And, you know, it felt a little tricky to answer so early on.
Yeah, I think that's true. It just struck me as not as formulaic as a lot of the leads' responses usually are in those kinds of situations. So it'd be like, so sorry that happened to you. Like, thank you for being open. Anyway, would you like to make out? Here's a rose. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I have
so it felt less, yeah, it less fit that pattern. And that's what stood out to me.
Right. Except that sometimes, I mean, yeah, totally. But the leads, you know, I think I would be in that position where I wouldn't even think to say something like that. So I think the lead sometimes kind of go, what do I do to that? What do I do? Like, what do I do? Oh, thank you for sharing. Okay, bye. Like, you know, whatever. And it's only because, what can I honestly offer, you know, if I was the lead? You know, like, what can he honestly offer? That's hard to say. Maybe he can do a lot, but can he? He's in a state he doesn't live in. He's on a TV show. Like, it's one of these, it's tricky. Like, it's good that he has that intention, but where does it end? You know?
Well, did you catch, you know, the what? Part it'd be where...
nice, yeah, if...
Oh, go ahead.
No, I have nothing. I'm saying what could she have said that would be real?
Did you catch the part that she gets to talk to the dad every day?
No.
Yeah, she said it.
That's good.
She said,
no, I didn't.
She said, oh, I talk to him every day or send him a text. So the producers must allow her phone time as a concession.
Yeah.
Which brings up the producers. This show,
a lot to
this,
say. Yeah.
It's so producer heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You could just feel the producer intervention on everything.
Yeah, even that the setups, right? She's like, I love my dad. Pause, awkward look. Matt James, awkward look. she really needs to open up more, even though that's a totally succinct answer, what she gave the first time around. I would not have pried deeper, but it's totally producer cut and producer. And I want to get into that when it comes to Victoria. Okay, so I guess just rounding this out, then the group date.
Yeah. Oh, I guess we should mention that both the one-on-ones, they got the rose, Bree and Sarah. And if we want to just briefly mention Bree's collapse at the end of the episode, which is not thematically important to the group date Victoria stuff necessarily, but she has you want to talk about that more in depth somewhere else.
Well, if you stand up too long, sometimes you get dizzy.
I know exactly that's totally low effort force drama, because I have low blood pressure and that happens to me all the time. I just have to sit down and drink some water.
Yeah.
And the cold open with that was weird. And that's another example of the producer, why did they have to show that twice? There was so non-issue, when they don't finish a rose ceremony where they could have, it's just so come on. That's not even anything.
And Victoria is going to get a rose. So that's another thing.
I assume she will. But yeah, I think it was an interesting, when this happened and they flashed at the "to be continued" screen, I was like, come on, because it seemed like from the previews that Sarah will be fine, that it was, possibly standing too long or low blood pressure or, panic attack, something else that that caused her to step
hot
off
lights.
For that moment.
Hot lights could be
dehydration, maybe, all sorts of possibilities for why a long shooting schedule and standing for so long could make you pass out. But I did particularly notice the producer intervention in how when she steps off the back of that riser and it's Bree who's standing with her and kind of catches her arm and walks her out, that they make the camera go crazy. Whoa, it's suddenly a Blair Witch Project up in here. And it's they had other angles that they could have done that were steady cam.
It's like we broke
just wanted
the
to make
fourth
it seem
wall.
To be somebody's running with a camera. And it was they had an actual steady cam on her the whole time too. They were just doing this to be chaos, upsetness, drama.
Well, that's ex-co-host Chris's theory. That whenever they do a through the blinds shot or something like that, that it was because be ready to do that because you never know, be ready to make it look so chaotic. But then there's always someone on camera that's definitely on them, in case there's something you miss when you do that.
Right.
The only thing I have that I want to make sure with Craig. On the group date, that you know who's who. So Lauren got the group date rose because she opened up. Let me sit you down. She opened up about what again? Was she the North Carolina back of the truck person?
Right.
Am I wrong? No, that's a different person. Kayla is the North Carolina back of the truck Durham person. Lauren is a corporate attorney in Miami who attended UNC Chapel Hill, which is the reference that Matt says. When he says you're a Carolina girl, what he means is she's a UNC Chapel Hill girl, which is a North Carolina thing. It's a big rivalry. So he went to Wake Forest, another North Carolina school. They would have played Carolina in football. And so he's making, it's a jokey reference to be so you're one of my rivals, and he says she's a Carolina girl.
What is she?
Thanks
how
for
was
the clarification.
Her entrance? Yes, thank you for that too, because I was like, isn't that good that she's a Carolina person? And then I lost.
It's generally good, I would say. But yeah, the joke is that she attended, it's the state flagship school. So it's sort of, one of the big sports powerhouses, but there's a lot of rivalries between UNC Chapel Hill and then also Duke and NC State and Wake Forest and all those places are all very competitive with sports.
Mm-hmm. And why did he give her the rose? Now I'm being Craig. Can you tell me what happened there? I have no idea.
Do you want Craig to answer or do you want me to?
I don't either.
Go ahead, Kayla.
Whoever has the answer.
She opened up about religion. That's what their conversation was about.
Yes, God.
They sat down and she immediately said she's looking for a man of faith in her life, that she feels like that's a foundation for a relationship. And Matt had this, what I thought was sort of interesting thing that he's saying back is that he says he doesn't normally lead with being a Christian in date situations because of preconceived notions, but he likes that she led with it because that let him open up. And I was like, I understand what he's saying, but when he did a group prayer on the first night, how is that not leading with the religion? You know what I mean? Like
outside of the bachelor, because he can, he's the lead, he's in charge, you know, in a way. He's a he's the one who can set the tone. Religion only here. No Ivans. I liked the infidelity lady, and that's Yesenia, not Yesenia. And I had to look her up.
Oh, see, yes.
I look her up. I liked her, the one who was like, I've been, and then she started crying because, and I don't understand why she cried either. Like, I have no idea. She just, not because she was cheated on, but something to do with her family, and I didn't understand. Do you know?
I did not understand what was happening there either. But the infidelity thing was she's, her past, like, serious relationships have ended because of infidelity, and Matt assures her that would never happen in a relationship with him. Parentheses, he's a man of God.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I liked her because I think she spoke outside of the cliches, like we're talking about too with what you're saying about Matt. She said certain bachelor tropes, but in a fresh way, and that's always like catches my ear. I'm so like, whoa, she actually got down to whatever it was, and I liked the way she said it. So I was super like, I have my eye on her already for that.
Okay.
And all of the things that you've been bringing up, EZR, in the evening portion of the group date after half the women have been eliminated.
Yes, yes. I have nothing. Yeah, that's all I have. I don't care about that. You want to talk about Frank? Go ahead.
I want to mention Franco, but we can bring him up back at the end under Fashion Roundup because he wore an extremely good outfit that I will describe in detail.
And we better get to it now because I don't think we're going to have the Fashion Roundup today because somebody has to leave early.
I do not care about the Fashion Roundup in terms of I do not participate in it. Have it after I go.
No.
Dear Lord. No. I am not going to sacrifice Victoria.
Talk about Franco's fashion, and then we'll go to Victoria.
Okay, I will only mention Franco's outfit here, and then we'll see if we have time for other outfits later. But Franco LaCosta returns, who presumably everybody remembers from the last season. He shot the Tayshia Zach Clark wedding dress date.
Oh, so it was the same guy.
It's the same guy, and he has done this multiple times on Bachelor seasons.
I knew that, but I, for some reason, thought it wasn't the same
guy. No, it's literally the same guy, and he was also wearing a good outfit.
It's literally the same guy.
It's literally him.
It's true. That's literally true. He's correct.
Franco's back, and what he is wearing, I immediately clocked, and then I took pictures of my TV to be like, this outfit. So what Franco is wearing is it's a red button-down shirt. Then he's got a pink suit on with the shirt. So it's a pink suit jacket, pink pants. And he's got a black bow tie with that and little black like Chelsea boots. Craig, do you know what Chelsea boots are?
I do not.
So like little ankle boots, the Beatles used to wear them in the 60s. They're kind of, they always come in and out of fashion, but tiny little men's boots, but women also wear them.
Okay.
So he's wearing those, but then on top of all of this, he's wearing a jacket that looks like it's entirely made out of feathers. I'm not totally clear, but I think it's all feathers, and he's wearing an intense amount of eyeliner. Like, it's a full look.
Hey, you know, I used to wear eyeliner to the club.
Oh my God.
You put a little bit of eyeliner on the bottom of your eye. It makes your eyes pop out when you're at the club. It totally works. I bet you know men that do that. You just didn't know it.
I definitely know men that do it purposefully. Like, not trying to do something sneaky. Like, you know,
it makes you look more mysterious.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking like you look like a vampire. I guess it does. Just a little bit of eyeliner pencil can go a long way.
So you like pencil rather than liquid liner. Huh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I bet you know guys that do it. You just don't know it.
No, I definitely know guys who have done it, especially in my college years. Or like,
yeah,
you
exactly.
Know,
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Local band scene situations.
Yeah. Oh my God, especially during those early aughts.
Yeah, early to like mid aughts.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
Well, Craig, like I think you're talking about different jeans. Kinds of people. Yeah. Craig, you're saying it to accentuate yourself. We're saying it because it was a style, specifically. Right. Okay. Right. Victoria.
I can't believe we're going to dedicate this much time to Victoria.
Yes.
Okay. Shock me. What's there to be said that hasn't already been said?
Well, I'll get to it. Let me do it my way, please.
Oh, yeah, we should mention another fashion roundup piece that's got to be brought into the main show, what Victoria wears during the rose ceremony. Yes,
it was beautiful, but you will get your fashion roundup. Go away, Craig. I mean, don't go away, but stop talking about anything else except what we want to talk about, Victoria.
Wait, you just said that you thought Victoria's outfit, (S), was beautiful.
I love that dress.
Okay. Podcast is over.
I love the most controversial bachelor opinion of all time.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of the podcast. No one else likes it. You will no longer hear Bachelor Mastery.
Like pink, like wallpaper look, and then the poofy sleeves, and then the like. Oh, I love it. I love that dress. Love it. I would wear it. I would have worn it 20 years ago. That's how I know I love it. I love it all the way around. Okay. Okay. So here's Victoria. I think despite her ending up acting exactly as she said everyone else is acting at the beginning of the episode, I think she's trying to point out how fake the show is, or she's jealous. Or she's trying to be a villain for screen time. So, did you guys notice that one of the times she was complaining that wasn't a two-camera interview was actually to a producer?
No, I did not.
Okay, you can hear the producer at the beginning of this clip ask her something like, hey, what's happening?
Hi, how are you?
She's one of the ones that was like, you should be more positive. One of them was like, don't you feel like this is going to be your downward spiral? I'm like, no. Do you not know me? Like, no, but I'm just saying. You guys are either lying or fake or like losers and get off the show. This is not a sorority. And I hit the fan.
That was the producer like instigating, hey, what's going on? And she's talking to the producer the whole time.
Right.
So okay. That's
more producer intervention.
Yeah, more producer intervention, but I think she's saying stuff that would come out of anyone's mouth about a bunch of women you've slightly pissed off. You know, she's jealous or she's mad or she's feels less than. Like, I don't think that's that bad. And then, so here's the part I think me and Caitlin most want to go into. When she gets, she's obviously kind of surrounded. And Victoria has to say something like, look, everyone here, I'm bored. I don't want to be friends with anyone. I just want to be on a date with this guy, or I want to get screen time because I'm a villain, or I'm a perceived villain, or I want to be a villain. I'm frustrated. And she's trying to make a very general statement, as you do. You know, you go, everyone here is so this. And then they go, no, you can't say that. And then when she says, you can't say that, she goes, okay, well, then you. And then everyone gets mad at her. And then, you know, and then that becomes like that snowballs, of course, later. So I'll play it for me and Caitlin to dissect.
I think where the disconnect is coming in is when other people are speaking for others. Nobody needs to speak for everyone because everyone doesn't feel the same way.
Yeah, thank you for saying that because I think I'm like authentic and real.
That's Victoria
and so
talking.
For you guys to like.
Don't say you guys. Sorry.
No, for each of it's a two-way street. I don't care. For like multiple people of you here to insult my character.
You can't clump us in a
group. Okay, well,
yes, you can.
Narrow out you. Like, you were rude to me earlier. Like, if you want to go there.
How was I rude to you?
Like, you said, I want to pick your brain and understand you and see why you act the way you do. You said that.
I said, I would like to get to know each other so that we can better understand each
and
other.
And that's Marilyn talking.
I didn't make up those words I just said. You said them. So, like, that was insulting to me.
Okay. So far, so good.
That's a fight between Victoria, who you can now kind of tell her voice, right? And Marilyn. So, Caitlin.
Let me break something to you. I was able to tell her voice after 5 seconds of hearing her talk in the first episode.
Craig. She has a very distinct voice. Yeah. It's not easily mistaken with the other women's.
And she has a it's not a vocal fry, it's the vocal uptick thing.
Yeah. The, like, whatever. Yeah.
Whatever. The... Like, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin, do you have anything about that fight specifically? Because I have something about her being a villain specifically.
A few things. Like, I had noted that fight because it felt like the words that they were using back and forth there were interesting to me. So this had all sparked off, I guess, earlier in the episode. People had been like, well, I guess I'm happy for Brie because she got the date. Like, they've been doing this weird thing where all the women, like, watch the beginning and or end of a date to be like, I guess they're making out now, which is sort of a weird vibe, right? To be like, let's like watch them get on the ATVs. Oh, he's putting her helmet on. I'm so jealous. I wish that was me. And like Kit says something like, that's my dream date. And I'm like, no, it isn't, Kit. Like, your dream date is not ATVing on the resort in Pennsylvania. but they're all like, now I'm so jealous, right? But then like Victoria also doesn't know the meaning of some words, which comes up some of the time. Well, she'll say something and people be like, but you just said this. And she'll be like, that's not what I said. But one of the things is she says she's not jealous. She just wants the thing that Brie has. And I was like, that's the definition of jealousy, though, Victoria. Like, you're not, I don't know why you're pretending you're not, you are. And it would be okay to say, like, I'm jealous. I wanted to go on a date with him. It was more like, anytime somebody charges her with something, to be like, oh, that was like a negative thing, or I mean, you're just jealous about this, she'll be like, no, I am not, and then extremely back up, you know, what they just accused her of being, essentially.
But don't the women do that to Victoria too? Because they're like, oh my god, you know, so and so got the date, oh, and then she's like, you guys all want to be on that date, don't pretend you don't. And they're going, no, I'm legitimately happy for Brie. And so she's calling that out. I felt that that's what she was doing. And then that's why she calls them fake, because they don't admit to being jealous.
Huh. And then I it comes back like to it's her. More, she feels like an outsider in this group, right? And she absolutely is an outsider. So that vibe she's getting is right, you know? But I think she has this sense, you know, all the other women seem like they're becoming friendly with each other. They seem like they're all on pretty decent terms at this point. But nobody actually likes Victoria. Nobody's been openly mean to her, right? But nobody has, they don't like her and they don't want to talk to her, basically. Which is, of course, her own fault in terms of her personality being very abrasive and uncomfortable to be around. So it is very natural to see why people would not be aiming to be her friend. My sort of understanding of what happened with her and Marilyn, and then which she then brings up to Matt later and like causes this whole drama about, is Marilyn is Victoria's roommate, right? Mm-hmm. What it seems like the setup here is probably what it was like at La Quinta, which is like after their initial quarantine, they then share a room with one other person. So it's not 16 women in a room, it's two women in a room. And so it's her and Marilyn. And what I sort of saw their reaction being like is Victoria would have probably hated anybody who she was sharing a room with. Totally, because she doesn't want to be sharing a room. She doesn't like anybody anyway. And so Marilyn became a much easier person for her to target out of the whole group of women, because she was like, well, I spend more time with Marilyn and I hate her now too. And I hate her more because we're trapped in a room together. So now Marilyn is like the center of my energies for disliking everybody. I've just shifted that onto this one person in particular.
Yeah. And she also is the kind of person who wherever she goes, she finds an enemy. You know, she has to find something that's not okay with this person. And like I said, you know, these can be mutually exclusive, though. She can legitimately say, you guys are all acting fake. Why are you pretending this or that? Why are you saying this? Why is this whole show, like, I'm on a show. Like, she's trying to understand what's happening when she's on a show, I think. It, you know, you get crises of, you know, existential crises when you go even on a trip with friends. You know, I think we wake up in a different bed and you're like, what is happening? What is this? And then you kind of project it onto other people. But then she acts out all the things she accuses everyone else of being. So it gets kind of, you can't defend her after that, you know?
It is something where I had more sympathy for her in episode one than I do now, because it does certainly seem like, from everything that we've seen and what we hear from the women in general, it doesn't seem like Marilyn did like anything egregious to her, right? She seems very sweet, very quiet, and Victoria was just like, I need a foil. This is my foil now. And it's like, whoa, okay, you could have like picked an actual person who had more spunk in them to do this with.
Yeah. That's the sad part, is that
they were roommates.
Like Marilyn doesn't even know what reality TV is. And I feel bad for, like she seems so too soft spoken. I don't know what's going on with why she's on the show, but like, especially, okay, here's a subtle slight that I will point out, and I think Craig will agree with me. They Chiron Marilyn is being from Studio City, and Victoria is being from LA. Now, Studio City is a neighborhood inside the city of LA.
True.
Why? And I doubt that Victoria is from LA City.
Right. She's probably from like Calabasas or something.
Right. Or she's probably from like, you know, Santa Clarita, or like these like enclaves that are not like the rest of the city.
Well, she could be from LA. She could live like in mid city or something.
She could live in West. She could live. Right. No, I'm not saying, they're saying from, they tend to say from that. That's why it's a little bit like, why, you know, it feel like it's a slight in its own way. Right.
Yeah, it is. I guess strange to say Studio City and then say Los Angeles instead of saying Los Angeles and Los Angeles. But, you know, imagine the people that write the Chirons are probably, I mean, how do I say this without sounding like a jerk? They probably don't know that Studio City is part of LA.
No, I mean,
I'd
like to believe that, except that now they're smart about things and they're very, very like not smart about things. And I feel like this is intentional. And here's your number one clue that there's so much producer intervention. Not just this early on, but yes, this early on, Chris Harrison would never mention a fight. You know, oh, why do you look so stressed? Is it because of Victoria and Marilyn? Yeah, it's just so like, come on. It's like, I don't know who's egging who on. Like, is Victoria egging, you know, is she doing it? Or is it also, they you know, they caught a live one. They know that she's easy to push, and so they're pushing her. Mm. But what kind of issues does Victoria have that they shouldn't be pushing her on? That's how I see this, because she is isolated one way or the other. So, so I'm going to talk about Victoria real quick, Craig, especially when it relates to Bachelor franchise history.
Okay, play the Bachelor franchise history drop.
For some Bachelor franchise history.
Okay, Craig, I will.
On Bachelor Masters.
Okay, so the thing about a villain in classic, I mean, Craig, screenwriting 101, is that you have to understand where they're coming from, right? You have to understand why. And there is no why here, I feel like my explanation is that she's cornered and she's, you know, upset.
She's the queen.
That's not a why. And so if you want someone to play entitled, like all the entitled past contestants, and I'm thinking specifically of Erica, who came on the show, said she was a princess, and she was like a socialite during Paris Hilton's time, came on with a little tiara and I think a scepter too, also, like, it feels like a carbon copy of this woman. Erica, look her up. I think she's from the first pilot, Jake season. And then there's Corinne from Nick's season, who you'll remember, Craig, right?
Yes, of course.
You also, yeah, if you want to play the entitled role, like those two women kind of embody, and now Victoria wants to be, you know, and there's a few other, there's more than those two scattered.
Well, just
those
wait till they let Britt out of the bag. Then we're going to get entitled, but, you know, the Ooh. Right way. The Kit, not Britt.
Oh, Kit. Yes, Kit. Yes.
Yeah. That reminds me. Based on your suggestion, I watched the first 10 minutes of the first episode of Gossip Girl.
Uh-huh.
Wait. Oh, or did you see exactly what we meant by Kit being like Gossip Girl?
Well, as far as who the casting agent was casting, absolutely. It's like they all look the same and they all look like Kit. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, I totally got that.
Well, anyway, my point of bringing up old Bachelor contestants like Erica and Corinne is that the thing about being entitled is that you're also clueless. And Victoria doesn't feel clueless to me. And also, you know, a villain has to have a motivation and, you know, or something people can relate to, because normally what I like, what I used to like about The Bachelor is that there were sides. I could understand the other side. And, you know, even the villains in real life have defenders, right? Like Elon Musk, people like him for some reason. But I don't see this, except for the fact that she seems like a stuck woman. Like, I don't see her real point in attacking. Like, if I didn't see her, it's kind of sad. I do feel really bad for Marilyn. She is seriously, I don't know what it is about her, but she definitely has a feel to me that she did nothing wrong. Right? That has to be the consensus.
Yeah, she projects total innocence, I think, because she is so soft-spoken and so quiet.
She's probably really evil.
The conversation that she has with Victoria, she is trying to be so reasonable and diffuse the situation. And Victoria's like, they have that whole back and forth about Victoria won't sit anywhere close to Marilyn, you know. And Marilyn keeps on being like, can we just talk? And she's like, only if you sit on this other place, you know. So it's just like this very wild situation where it is very hard to not be on Marilyn's side because she is being reasonable, you know. But I would argue against easier. You said you didn't see Victoria as sort of, do you say she isn't entitled?
I'm saying if she wants to play the entitled role, she also has to act clueless, and she doesn't act clueless. Okay. Therefore, I don't believe her as like
a villain. I do think she's clueless, honestly, because there are several things you can just point to fashion. The things that she wears and how she wears them is clueless, right? Like,
what?
I mean, she must lots of people pointed out that her bra is always showing, no matter what she wears.
Yes.
It is always showing.
Even with that dress you like, EZR, the back.
Yeah, it's like the full back of the bra, not even just like a little strap peeking out. It's like you see literally like 50% of the bra or more in these.
Are you supposed to not wear a bra with a dress like that? I'm asking.
That kind of bra.
Yeah, you have to wear something else because it is too visible. And if you're going to do visible bra, it has to be like a fun visible bra, you know, like has to have a fun pattern or very clearly be like it's a semi-sheer thing and you're wearing a leopard print bra, you know, like you have to do in some sort of fun way. The way she wears it very much makes it feel to me like either she didn't notice that that's what was going on, or like it's a sort of thing where your friend might be like, oh, wear this different bra or something, but she doesn't have any friends. But she also says this thing, she says it to MJ when she is discussing how Victoria tells Matt that she thinks Marilyn's toxic and she needs to go and she's bullying her and blah blah blah. And Victoria comes out from that and starts bragging to numerous groups of girls about how she has just told Matt about the real Marilyn. And they're all like, huh? The real Marilyn? Like,
really?
That doesn't track with me at all, right? And Victoria says this one sentence to MJ that I wrote down because it really stuck in my mind. As the women are sort of being like, what are you talking about? Like, what exactly did you tell him? What's going on? And Victoria says to MJ about Marilyn, she's not quality, which I thought was an interesting way of phrasing that.
Yeah. Not quality.
Not quality. That's what's wrong with her. She's not quality.
Well, that's like I felt like that was a social media slight. Like it was just taken from the way people say things on the internet. I didn't feel like it was thought of in her own brain, you know?
Well, yeah, that supports Caitlin's theory though. Because she's just regurgitating stuff that she
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think she is regurgitating, but I also think she's analytical because she's analyzing how everyone's reacting. So I don't think she's clueless. Like, I think she is in certain areas, but I don't think she's, yeah. I think she's too aware because, okay, well, I guess to get back to the history part, Erica and Corinne didn't care what anyone, like, they kept up that princess act the whole time. She just kind of went from I'm the queen to everyone needs to, you know, like, oh, it's not night one anymore. Ah, you know, you can't really act like that. And because remember night one, she was the one who was like, girl, go talk to him. Do it. Everyone needs to go talk. You know, she was so she was doing that fake thing that that she's accusing everyone else of doing, right, where she's telling them to she's telling them in a catty way to go talk to them. So that's why I
see. I think she is unaware in that way of. So you're saying like somebody like Corinne would be like, she acts entitled and she doesn't seem, you know, she's not like, oh, I should get the women on my side. I don't think Victoria is legitimately trying to get these women on her side. She acts like, you know, I'm going to tell them that I did this great thing by outing Marilyn's secret toxic behavior to Matt. And all the women are like, I literally don't understand what you're talking about. But yeah, the way she approaches them is like, they'll definitely know what I'm talking about. They're going to be on my side regarding Marilyn being awful. And they're all like, huh? What?
I think she's just trying to, like, play the, if I get enough. Remember that episode of The Office? Where, I mean, this reminds me of this literally. The Steve Carell accidentally says some secret. And because he wasn't supposed to say the secret and he doesn't want to get scared, he doesn't want to get called out for saying the secret, he starts spreading a bunch of crazy secrets so that the waters are so muddied that he never has to, like, he's not really the person who said it. And who knows, everything's crazy. Ah, you know, and that's what I felt like she was doing. She was preempting a lot of things because she knows that somewhere in her brain, she knows Marilyn is not that bad of a it's not definitely not bad enough to call out and not that bad of a person. She's trying to muddy the waters by being like, I already told him about him. Also, she's horrible, right? Okay, we're all on the same page here. Like, she when she came back, she had like a everyone back me up on this kind of feel.
Well, once again,
yeah, and they were all like, roommates. What?
They said she said that they're roommates, so she knows more about Marilyn than anyone else.
Right, and by saying it, meaning that she knows better than, so you listen to me, because I was her roommate.
Yeah.
I feel like she's not clueless. Yeah, like
but nobody is, like, is buying what she's selling at this point, that makes sense, right? Like, she's, I mean, the stuff where she went off on being an empath, and that's how she can tell that Marilyn's toxic energy cannot be allowed, and all of that, and it's like, oh, okay, Victoria. I was waffling on being like, she's a producer plant who's like an actress. She's playing this up. And then I was like, I don't think she's acting. I think that this is who she is. And she's just maybe doing a slightly exaggerated version. But this feels like her real personality.
Yeah.
Right. Oof. No, yeah. It feels like she is. It feels like she came on with a plan. Her plan's unraveling. And so she's trying to, you know, scoop it all back into her bag, but at the same time she's being exploited for the same reasons. Producers are exploiting her for those reasons of her trying to manically you know, make sure her the way she wants to appear, and even maybe being a villain, like, you know, because you get more airtime.
Well, the way she wanted to appear included the purple matching sweatshirt and sweatpants. So.
I liked that outfit.
No,
I'll say
you
that.
Didn't. No, you didn't.
I liked that one. No, I like a coordinated sweatsuit outfit.
Okay,
Craig.
So here is your
purple sweatshirt that looks like it has wine stains on it.
It was a tie dye sweatshirt.
This is the fashion roundup. Craig likes to talk about people no wearing.
This is gonna be the shortest. Fashion.
No, go ahead. I can just mute.
No. We can't do this without you, EZR.
What? Are you serious? I don't. You just told me my fashion sucks. You might end the podcast because I like that dress. You can totally do it without me.
Oh my God. EZR, it's the worst dress we've ever seen on The Bachelor or Bachelorette.
That dress is beautiful. You hear me? Beautiful. I love it. I love the scrunch. I love, and I'm not like, this is not like an 80s thing. I realize now it's kind of 80s looking, but it's not to me. It's beautiful. What is wrong with it? It's so cool.
Everything is wrong with it, the answer.
But Caitlin, how can you say that and then say you liked the jumpsuit?
So it wasn't a jumpsuit. It was like a purple tie-dyed sweatshirt and sweatpants that match. And the sweatshirt was like a little bit cropped. And to me, like, that's an outfit I'd be wearing around house, being like,
not
I'm comfy,
on national television,
but also cute. Yeah, no, it's like pajamas to me. It'd be like somewhat cute pajamas. Not necessarily cute
pajamas. She was wearing it as pajamas, though, Craig. She was talking to the producer, kind of off in her mind, I'm sure, off camera, right? Unless she was wearing it at some other point.
She wore it throughout the initial fight with Marilyn in front of everybody else.
Right, and they're all in pajamas.
They're
right?
All in
okay, but
clothes.
Even as pajamas, yeah. The purple thing is awful. Just like the dress is awful.
Craig, those are different levels of awful.
Yeah, well, they're both awful. You just admitted it. So there, I win.
Boo.
All right, fine. Craig Boo. Has the best fashion sense
okay,
of anyone on this podcast.
Go to one other fashion bit, and then we'll sign off.
Okay, just one other. All right, hang
no,
on.
No,
I'm
go,
scrolling through my
go,
notes.
Go for it. My foot's out the door. You guys just keep right. talking.
We all don't right, have too easier. Much else, but yeah, bye, easier. I
was,
wrote down.
Wait, we
all
don't
of
get a goodbye?
Outfits.
What was that all about? She just left?
Right. I think she left.
No, I'm right here. I just have to put you guys on mute. Goodbye.
Okay, but say goodbye. Okay.
All right, well, I wrote down a bunch of notes about outfits, but the most exciting ones are the ones I think we've already talked about. I did notice, like, some cute sweaters on some of the women throughout this episode. Ooh, and we should definitely talk about Chelsea, you know, the runway model, Chelsea.
Chelsea, the runway model.
Tall woman, shaved head.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, she was wearing, like, a red dress without straps that was pressing her breasts in really tightly.
Yes, and she wears good outfits throughout this episode. It's a lot of casual wear because she's, like, not on a serious one-on-one date or anything, but I wrote down a bunch of stuff where I was like, oh, that's a cute outfit for just hanging around in the house. Like, there was one, what she was wearing when Victoria was wearing the tie-dyed purple sweatsuit. Chelsea was wearing a, like, cream-colored white faux fur stole or wrap over a white off-the-shoulder sweater with gigantic hoop earrings. So those were not pajamas. That was, like, comfy casual, but not pajamas.
Right.
Got some matte outfits. That
maybe
I've
that's why
down.
The purple thing doesn't make sense to me, because if you're as calculating as Victoria probably thinks she is, why would you pack that outfit in your suitcase?
I think that Victoria is not good at being, like, she thinks she's calculating something, but she's constantly misfiring on her calculations, you know?
It's like, oh, let me bring the wine stain purple shirt. That'll really get Matt's juices going.
I mean, I think that's
You've
like,
you've never
for
heard
me...
of tie-dye, Craig?
You're still here?
He's there just quietly
Phantom EZR.
I'm mad that that's like a total look right now, and you're like acting like it's stains. That's
yeah,
weird.
It's
well,
not
that's what
actual
it looks like.
Stains.
I know it's not actual stains, but it looks like stains.
It looks like tie-dye to me, Craig.
Oh, okay. All right. You win. Okay, Matt's outfits.
Matt's outfits. On the ATV, he wears a quilted blue vest. It's very like J. Crew sort of his look. I did note down what he wore on his evening portion of the one-on-one with Sarah, because I was like, oh, that's a really boring outfit, Matt. Like, what are you doing with this? It was kind of, it was a beige/gray, so like grayish, zip-up sweatery thing underneath a jacket in the exact same tone of grayish, right? So I was like, you're wearing a zip-up and then a jacket on top of the zip-up, and they're both in like the most boring, not very flattering color, and it just made me be like, Matt, why did you do this? Why are you doing this on TV with yourself? Were there other outfits? Oh, God, I forgot Matt's worst fashion mistake on this episode. What he wears on the evening portion of the group date, it looks like, I couldn't tell if it was an acid wash red jacket or if it was a tie-dye red jacket, but either way, it was bad. It was just a bad piece of clothing.
I'm having trouble
wear.
Recalling that.
He only wears it in a few scenes, but it's like what he's wearing when he has the sit downs with the women after the group date, where they talk about religion and stuff like that. He's wearing this very ugly jacket. I guess what I'm saying here is I feel like Matt's fashion, it goes between being like very classic basics that kind of just look nice because, you know, they're, it's very like J. Crew. It's very preppy, but sort of like a little bit nicer than Southern prep style. It's very like finance bro, but polished finance bro. But then sometimes he'll wear stuff where you're like, Matt, that is hideous. What are you doing?
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell. Like, I think when he tries to take risks on his fashion, it often doesn't pay off, right, if that makes sense.
I can appreciate J. Crew. I haven't been to a J. Crew in years and years and years, but
I think it's appreciate a good look. If you're doing like a nice basics, you know, neutrally toned sort, yeah, of stuff, I feel like it works really well for that. That hideous red acid washer tie-dye jacket to me was just a real, real misstep. Because he looked nice on last week's episode. He was wearing that velvet tux the whole time, and that was a great look on him.
Right.
But when he gets into some of his more casual wear, I guess it's just not as appealing to me.
I used to have a black wool coat from J. Crew when I lived in Iowa, where you need thick wool coats to survive the winter.
So, yeah. I'm trying to think if there's any other notable outfits that stuck out to me. Well, of course, Victoria's dress. Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. Oof. You know, I think, boo, I might be making... Hey, wait a second. It is now way past the time you were supposed to leave EZR.
You... I'm doing what I needed to do. I'm not participating. I'm making sure you guys aren't going to smirch my beautiful dress.
Okay.
Well,
all right, we'll
describe the dress briefly for people who have not fully taken this whole thing in. I took a lot of notes on this dress to make sure I'd be able to describe it. And my note begins, Victoria, what the hell are you wearing, girl? ?? It's a pink floral pattern on the dress, but like little flowers, not like big floral pattern. So like kind of a baby pink color, tiny floral stuff in there. It's got gigantic puff sleeves, very big puff sleeves. You're thinking 80s puff, Pioneer Woman puff. That's the level of puff.
Right.
Then underneath the bust area, she has a cutout window in the dress, like right below where your bra ends, but like before your stomach really is, like kind of ribsy area. Got a cutout on the ribs. On the front, down the center of the front of the dress is a drawstring from the top to the bottom. So you could cinch it and make the dress a little shorter in the center if you wanted to. It is already a mini dress, like a tight mini dress. So if you cinched it up, you'd be seeing underwear, basically. Like, it's not a practical cinch. Let's put it that way. The back is pretty open back, which is where she gets in trouble with that bra, because in an open back dress like that, if you're wearing like any kind of bra, it's going to show at least partially. But what she's wearing is like a black and white, almost look like sports bra to a certain extent back there. So it's basically taking up that whole window where it's like a low back. It should be you're seeing skin there. Instead, what you're seeing is a bra that doesn't match the dress or seem to be particularly cute or anything like that. It's just kind of it's a very functional bra, I'm assuming. And I can't hate on that as a person who doesn't like to wear strapless stuff because I'd prefer to wear a bra. But then you just don't choose a dress that's like so low in the back that it would show your entire bra. That's right. All I'm saying.
Yeah. Agreed. 100%, Caitlin.
From the like,
oh, now
nipple
you're back
up. Well, because I did not see this front cutout pane thing. But
oh, there's a cutout
from like the bust line up. It looked like I loved it. And I did see the back and I like the scrunchy up look up the back thing. And I rest my case.
All right. Well, there's probably circumstances where the dress could look good on somebody. No doubt. That's true for anything. So
yeah,
with that in mind, It's not the dress, it's the person wearing the dress.
But I love the poof, the flowers, the pink.
Do you have pictures of your prom, EZR?
I do not. Yes, I do, and I did not wear
it. Oh, you totally have to send that to our group chat.
I wish I could have worn something like that. I wish I could have found something like that, but I did not. That is rad, though. That's a cool... It's not like... Well, I guess it is like a cocktail look. Like, it's... Yeah, did it not stand out?
It stood out for all the stood wrong out.
Reasons. It stood out, but yeah, I think there is a. I could see this being cute on somebody, but you'd need to style it in like a specific way. You know, like it felt like the dress didn't really make much sense. Her hair was sort of, it looked like she had given up in a certain respect, right? But like the hair was like not styled in any way.
She looked like she'd been in it for too long. That was my problem too. But the dress, I can always isolate the dress from the person. Like when people, you know, when they do the, who wore it best? And they're always like, well, the difference is here is the updo. I'm like, who cares? I'm looking at the dress. So, but yeah, it looks like she'd been in it for like 10 hours instead of the, you know, three.
Right, right.
Yeah, it was certainly the most noticeable dress of the rose ceremony and cocktail hour before that, right. I guess.
Yeah. I liked Sarah's pink outfit that she fainted in. I like
the dress she was wearing at the end.
Yeah, I like a good form-fitting dress like that. Look good on it.
Yes, we know you're a cis hetero man, Craig.
Well, doesn't how something looks on somebody and whether or not it shows off features, isn't that a totally appropriate thing to talk about during the fashion round? Yeah, I
think
it is.
And I think the dress looked cute on her. It wasn't like a kind of dress that I would see on a rack and be like, ooh, I want to wear that, you know? Right. But it looked good on her. Like, she was definitely pulling that off. Right. I think Piper, who I don't notice in any other time, but what she was wearing at the rose ceremony was like a green, glittery, long dress that looked kind of 70s glam. That looked cute on her.
Right. Yeah. All right, well, it sounds like we're done with the fashion
roundup. Yeah, I think we've got it all.
Thanks, Caitlin.
I take so many notes on clothes now to be like, are we going to talk about this? What's everyone wearing?
We can't rob you of the fashion roundup. We've learned that lesson today.
Well, we could have cut out. I mean, honestly, the two big outfits of the episode are Franco LaCosta's and Victoria's final dress. And we definitely were going to cover those either way.
Yeah, for sure. All right, y'all. Let's see. Follow us on social media at Bachelor Masters. Give us a review on the Apple iTunes app. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye. I had to, Mark has to work and I had to.